summary of the nightcap. We're rolling along here on VSiN live from the Circus Sportsbook. Really a light night, late night for, does that make sense?
All right.
Yeah, I said night a lot.
Yeah.
A light late night.
There you go.
There's no need for another night. Phoenix right now up 84-81 on the Utah Jazz. They were trailing to head into the fourth quarter, but the Phoenix Suns have come out and outscored Utah 7-3 here in this fourth quarter. So the Suns have a slight lead. JVT looking for that glorious middle, and hopefully he can bring it on home. I think Adam Hill last week when he was in here, he brought home a middle. Maybe one of these days I'll get one. I don't know if I'm capable.
I feel like you've hit a middle before in your life.
Maybe one or two.
Yeah, so you're fine.
But hopefully you're able to get one tonight. You've got Utah in game at +6.5, and pre-flop you went Phoenix taking the two, yeah. So +2. So you got a little bit of 8.5-point window there for Utah and Phoenix.
I'm really surprised. You've mentioned this a couple of times. I was generally surprised to see the total move in the direction it did before the game. You know, it seemed like this had the makings of a relatively slow-paced game. You know, two really good defensive teams, one team that can shoot the ball relatively well in Phoenix, but takes majority of their shots from the two-point area of the floor. It had kind of this feel to it, right? What are we at, 84-81? But we'll see. You know, look, overtime, it's where dogs go to die, and they don't call it overtime for nothing, all those kind of cliches. And it's a tight game, which could ultimately hurt you there, but it is pretty surprising that it moved in that direction, just given the status and the makeup of these teams.
Yeah, this was a 41-point first quarter. It was 51-40 at the half. And a total of 227.5 here at Circa. Certainly trending under. Just looking at the day so far, Indiana and Minnesota played to a 141-137 Pacer victory. And you mentioned no Malcolm Brogdon, no Sabonis. No problem for the Pacers. They get it done as a 1.5-point home dog against the Minnesota Timberwolves. Defense seems to be optional for the Minnesota Timberwolves.
Optional or something they're just not capable of doing, right? Yeah. Either one. They do have some flaws. And it's funny, like, when you look to, so we're starting to see from Minnesota the last, since the All-Star break, I guess you can give it to them. But when I wrote about them preseason for the NBA guide, I thought they were going to be a team that was just going to have games just sailing over the top, almost like the Pelicans were early in the year, right? Because you had a lot of guys who had a high ceiling offensively, but a really low ceiling on defense, low floor on defense. But what's been surprising, Tim, is how bad their offense has been. Like, their offense has been abhorrent. Like, today, they had a really good showing against Indiana, but you're talking about, like, I got in front of me a 9-game stretch where they didn't have an offensive rating higher than 108. Like, it's just been pretty abhorrent offense for a while for Minnesota. So maybe they're trying to break out of it. Maybe they're going to look down the stretch a little bit more like the team I thought, where it's going to be a whole bunch of 120 to 120 games, and those will go sailing over.
Minnesota, there's a chance they get back-to-back number one picks. They are the worst team in the NBA right now, and a team that has Karl Anthony Towns, and I know Russell has been hurt, what, majority of the season here.
Just came back the other day.
The potential of bringing in Cade Cunningham to this team, or Jalen Suggs. We'll see. I mean, it is the lottery, and never seems to break your way back-to-back years. But, man, they've been awful this year. How about 6 triple-doubles in his last 7 games? That's what Russell Westbrook did. Bradley Beal back tonight. Another over that hits. 131-116. Wizards win at Indiana. The return of Kevin Durant, another over that hit, 139-111. The Brooklyn Nets beat the New Orleans Pelicans a total of 232. It sails over with 250 points. JVT, this made him happy. The Charlotte Hornets beat the Oklahoma City Thunder, so they clinch their win total for the season. And the Denver Nuggets come back to beat the San Antonio Spurs tonight at home, 106-96. So the Denver Nuggets cover the 5 there, and the under hits in Denver and San Antonio. 88-84. So Utah now on a little bit of a run here. So we'll keep you updated on that. Sean Miller out as the head coach of Arizona. We'll discuss what the future holds for the Wildcats next, right here. It is the Nightcap. Hour number three here live from the Circa Sportsbook. Tim Murray and JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel, our senior NBA analyst. He's sweating out Utah and Phoenix, hoping for a middle situation as Devin Booker drives in to make an 89-86 Utah with a three-point lead with seven and change to go in the fourth quarter. The college basketball season came to a close on Monday night, as we all know, as Baylor took care of business, winning the national championship, covering the number under hits, 86-70, the final score. And Jim Root joined us all throughout the college basketball season at Second Chance Points on Twitter. And Jim, let's start with the news of the day in college basketball. Sean Miller out as the head coach of Arizona. And you all right?
I just like to do the threes. Like, I wish I was a really good athlete so I could hit threes and go like this.
I like the Temple one.
Oh, I don't mean to interrupt you. Continue.
No, you tell us. Jim will wait.
Jim, my optimal three-point celebration was to actually, when I hit a three, to put up the threes like coyote ears and howl as I ran down the court.
Oh.
That would be my
favorite. I kind of like that.
Right? Like, it's really unique.
I often angered one of my fellow weaver, Matt Cox, because I would do like a sniper rifle with a three
pack,
and he really didn't like that at all, but I always do it to perturb him.
It's a good one.
I like the bow and arrow. Take it out.
Yep.
Yeah. Shotgun's good too. Yeah. Oh, there's so many good ones.
A lot of good ones. All right, Jim, let's get to Arizona.
Let us talk Arizona, JVT. Come on.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. You're derailing the important
Tim told me
Arizona
to carry the
discussion.
Show.
I did.
Tim told me to bring the energy. I'm trying, and now I'm failing. So I'll just watch my basketball.
I did. I got my second shot yesterday. I am a little bit low on energy. I'm just trying to fake it here. But Arizona makes the decision. The timing, Jim, seems a bit odd. And I don't know the ramifications of buyouts and all that. As we, you know, with the Chris Beard hiring, I think in Texas, his buyout went down, a couple days, or the day that he ended up getting hired by Texas. But were you surprised by the move and the timing of it for Arizona to cut ties with Sean Miller today?
I was surprised. Yeah, especially doing it now in April rather than, you know, they knew their season was over before the Pac-12 tournament. They couldn't play in the postseason. They knew that they were done on like March 10th this year. So to wait this long does surprise me. I would imagine there had to be some sort of like once the season is over buyout. But I mean, really, I read it, he had 1 year left in his deal. They're not going to extend him right now with the way that they're not really winning. They're not putting together at-large caliber basketball teams. When you add that with some of the off-court stuff, then that's how you end up firing him like Sean Miller instead of getting the lifetime contract like Bill Self, because he is locked in forever because he keeps winning. And unfortunately, Miller wasn't doing that. So here we are with a coaching search at Arizona in early April.
So, you know, I made the case, Jim, that there was a couple of things. One of them was they wouldn't make this move in terms of the timing unless they didn't. I think they know who they want, and I think they know who they want wants them, right? Like, that was kind of my thinking. You don't make that move in that regard. But my reckless speculation was that potentially, like, could more be coming down for Arizona? Like, again, just kind of tying this into the timing of the move, like, could something else be in the works for this program, and which is why they let him go at this point, too? You know, I'm just trying to figure this out, but it does seem like whoever they want, which, you know, the Gonzaga assistant coach, name escapes me, that's out there. Eric Musselman has been reported, but that's kind of my feel here is I think they kind of know who they want, right? They wouldn't make this move unless there was something mutual between the two parties.
Yeah, that was kind of my perception too. Of like, wow, really they're going to go in this direction? But Tommy Lloyd is the name you're thinking of there, the Gonzaga assistant. Some of the online odds have Damon Stoudemire is the favorite. He's been at Pacific. He won the WCC Coach of the Year last year. There's people bandying around the Pacific record while he's been there, and I just throw that out. He's done a terrific job there. He entered with NCAA sanctions when he took over. He's been excellent. And then Miles Simon is an NBA assistant. That's kind of the Mike Woodson, Juwan Howard kind of route where you get the famous alum that's coming off an assistant staff in the NBA. But yeah, I think Stoudemire or maybe it's Floyd now that Gonzaga's season is over, and that was part of why they were waiting. Mm-hmm. That could potentially be part of it. But I do agree that they have had something in line or in mind, and that would lend credence to why they're doing this now rather than 2 or 3 weeks ago instead.
What about Josh Pastner? And I know I was talking to someone who has just worked with the program many years ago, and he said, you know, Josh Pastner is thought of very highly there in Tucson, as is, you know, Miles Simon and others. But Pastner having the year that they did at Georgia Tech, winning the ACC tournament championship. Obviously, they lose their top player for the NCAA tournament. But is Pastner, in your opinion, an option there for Arizona?
He's a candidate. I think I did see that he is interviewing. I would probably go elsewhere, to be quite honest. I'm not a huge Pastner guy. And what? He was probably in trouble at Memphis before he took the Georgia Tech job. That was almost a weird, like, Memphis to the ACC parachute almost, where, you know, he struggled for a while at Georgia Tech. This was his first tournament season, and he had a senior-laden team. He had the ACC Player of the Year, and they were a 9 seed. You know, it's not like the ceiling was super high for them. Georgia Tech got 3 seeds back with Paul Hewitt back in the day. It's not like he has already ascended to some crazy level with Georgia Tech. I would be inclined to go elsewhere if I were Arizona. He's young. He has done pretty solid in developing that program and getting them back to the NCAA tournament after quite a drought, but I would go in a different direction than Pastner if I were the Arizona administration there.
Hey, Jim, is Arizona still a good job? Like, just given everything around the program and whatnot, like, is this still a job that would be really coveted by a lot of folks? I tend to think yes, but obviously the perception of what floats around the program could diminish it a little bit.
Yeah, I think that, you know, maybe that takes them out of like the A class job because you're going to have to step in and deal with some sanctions, but it's still, you know, one of the premier programs in the Pac-12, which, hey, it just had a renaissance in the NCAA tournament, looking great. It is the Conference of Champions once again, or at least close. And, you know, UCLA on the rise does kind of, you know, it sets up a nice rivalry there. I still think it'll be in high demand. And I mean, if they pull a name like Musselman, I think that'll kind of answer the question of a guy who's got Arkansas really rolling and just kind of dominating the transfer portal year after year. And if they were able to get him to come all the way over from Arkansas back out west after being at Nevada, I think that would just kind of show, like, people aren't that worried about the sanctions. They know once those pass, this is going to be an A-plus type of job.
Well, I want to get to Arkansas. They got a huge transfer in Chris Likes coming from Miami. The thought was that Likes would likely head back to where he's from in the D.C. area, maybe going to Georgetown, and he lands at Arkansas. So you're seeing what, you know, Musselman thrived at Nevada and has done so at Arkansas so far, continue down there. Do you think that Musselman would be interested in the Arizona job? And then we'll jump into Arizona, but into Arkansas and their odds. But do you think there could be some interest there from Musselman to head to Arizona?
I have heard nothing. Like, this is completely uninformed. I have no sources or anything on this, but I kind of think he would. He just seems like a very ambitious, energetic guy looking for that next challenge. I don't think anybody really expected him to go from Nevada to Arkansas. I mean, he was jumping across the country there, no real ties to the region. So to go all the way back across to Arizona, I don't think would be, you know, the biggest upset in the world. So if he sees that as like, I have a better route to more consistent Final Four contention, whereas at Arkansas, I'm always kind of trying to scrap together this team. I mean, both are very storied programs, but if he sees Arkansas as like the chance to be the crown jewel of the West Coast and dominate the Pac-12, then I could definitely see him taking that lead.
Talking once again to Jim Root at Second Chance Points on Twitter. Sticking with Arkansas, as I mentioned, they get the Chris Likes transfer. You know, last year, a lot of steam on them. I was very high on them, I think, as you know, Jim, to come out of that region that Baylor was in, and they go to the Elite Eight. Is this an early team to keep an eye on in the futures market?
Yeah, probably, just because Musselman is always lurking. I mean, you see every prospect's list come out, every transfer, and it's like 5 schools in Arkansas and 6 other schools. Like, they're just in the mix. They're always lurking. And so if he puts together the right blend of talent, then absolutely this team can be terrific and make a run. They got Likes. They also have Adige Toney coming from Pitt, another former top 100 recruit, a guy who started in the ACC for 2 or 3 years. I believe it was 2. So, I mean, he's constantly bringing in talent. They do lose Moody, the potential kind of lottery first-round talent that didn't do himself too proud in the NCAA tournament. But they're going to be talented. They're going to play that kind of, not helter-skelter, but they're going to pressure. They're going to be up in your feet or up in your face most of the time defensively. I think it's going to be a solid squad, especially if he sticks around. I'm not ready to jump on them at 30-1. I might wait and try to like pick off that number if they do get another transfer here, another real big name on the market. But it is definitely one to keep an eye on because they're going to constantly be lurking in the market for big names.
Is that me? Sorry, I got wrapped up in looking at other
what's going on in the Jazz game.
You yelled at me earlier, and I
wasn't
want to
yelling at you.
I didn't want to interrupt.
All right.
Chris Paul is working his magic.
You focus on the Jazz. Me and Jim will talk some college hoops here, okay?
Hey, Jim, any futures bets that you made so far?
I have locked in a couple. Actually, they're both in the state of Indiana, the two that I like so far. Yeah, that's the one. Notre Dame and Butler. No. I picked off Purdue at 40-1 as soon as it opened. And what I see, they're no better than 26-1 now. They're kind of down that 20-1 region. They're going to be top 5, top 10 in every single preseason poll. They bring back basically everybody. A lot of freshman to sophomore leaps coming. So I think Purdue is going to be a real intimidating squad out of the Big Ten. If Jaden Ivey really makes the leap, I think he can in the backcourt as a creator and a scorer to go along with what they have in the front court. I think Purdue's going to be excellent. And then the other one I took a stab at was Indiana. They're 150-1 in places. I think 200-1 at Westgate right now, which is wild to me. They're going to have an All-American. Trayce Jackson-Davis has already announced his intentions to come back. He'll be one of the best 5-ish players in the sport, I think. They've got a new coach, Mike Woodson, taking over. Should open up the offense a little bit, be a little less robotic. I mean, the players have already said that. They're like, oh, we're going to be less robotic on offense. It's going to be wonderful. So I think there's some upside there with the regime change and with the talent that they have. They grabbed a couple transfers, Parker Stewart from UT Martin, formerly of Pitt, and Xavier Johnson, also formerly of Pitt. So they're going to have some talent there. We'll see if Woodson's able to put it together with his new staff, but I think at that price, if you can get that 150 or 200-1, Indiana is worth a look.
Well, speaking of Notre Dame, Jaden Ivey's mom, head coach of Notre Dame's women's basketball team.
Nice.
You knew that, JVT.
And Pat Connaughton?
Yes, he went there. He also went there, too. Yes. Gonzaga, I know everyone thinks they should be relegated to playing JV basketball after Monday night's performance. But surprisingly, even though they're terrible and overrated, they have the shortest odds to win the national championship this upcoming year. I guess speak to what we should expect from Gonzaga. I would imagine after the performance we saw, Drew Timmy, he can't be going pro. He's got a lot to work on. And with him coming back, he's going to be preseason player of the year in a lot of publications. Monster recruiting class likely coming in. And I know they're going to be busy potentially in the portal as well.
Yeah, I've had to really exercise patience and not just like dig into the dregs of the debate about Gonzaga. It's just, they're awesome. Baylor was a little better and a lot better on Monday night, but it does not detract from Gonzaga at all. They were excellent. Look what they did to USC when everybody was trying to call that the upset coming and it didn't happen at all.
Can you not remind people of that? I mean,
I'm sorry. You told me to speak on Gonzaga. I had to bring it up.
I was on USC too. Yeah. All right, we all lose.
they're going to be awesome again next year. They're the favorite across the board at basically every single sports book you look at right now for next season. I think it's justified. I mean, Baylor's going to lose a ton. If Timmy's back, you get Nembhard likely back. And if they get Chet Holmgren, the number one recruit in the country, who is like a 7-foot string bean, but just
so he weighs like 20 pounds, Jim.
He's so good though. I mean, this Gonzaga team had no shot blocking like at all. Yeah. It was one of their biggest flaws all season. And he's going to be probably the best shot blocker in college basketball next season. So I that changes their defense. It changes what they have in the front court. If they can just get a little more athletic in the back court, I think Strother and Harris, two of the recruits, top 100 recruits last year that sat on the bench all season. I think that'll help them a little bit, getting them incorporated into the rotation. I think Gonzaga is justifiably the number one. They'll be my number one team. I'm bummed that all the odds are below 10-1. I picked off a 12-1 last season early in the preseason. Doesn't seem like I'm going to get that this time around, but I think they deserve to be number one. It's earned for them right now.
Could they, Walker Kessler from UNC, isn't Gonzaga maybe the front runner to grab him too?
Yes, I have seen that. Although if Timmy is coming back, that might hurt that. I Kessler was just backing up three bigs at North Carolina. He probably doesn't want to come sit on the bench behind Timmy and Holmgren there if they end up with that front court. So that might deter him, basically waiting to see what Timmy does. But I'm with you. He couldn't play defense in that game. He was loose with the ball against Baylor. So I think Timmy has to come back.
Yeah, he was a defensive liability. All right, Jim, 30 seconds. Davion Mitchell going pro. A lot of Baylor pieces going to be gone. What do you expect from Baylor right now?
Top five. I think that team's going to be terrific again. LJ Cryer was buried on the bench, but he's awesome. Flagler's obviously ready to be a star. I think Matthew Meyer will have a star turn next year, too, with more minutes. They're going to be terrific interior defense with Chamu Chachua and Thamba back. I think Scott Drew's going to have another excellent team next year, top five quality at Baylor.
All right, Jim, you're the man. Appreciate it. Appreciate all the insight throughout the season.
Yeah, thanks for having me on all season. We'll see if I can mix it up in the offseason here a little bit, too.
There you go. At Second Chance Points on Twitter, JVT, he called overtime as a possibility. The under maybe being in question. 102-102. Heading to overtime? We'll see. Still 10 seconds to go. Jazz, Suns, we'll get you updated on that next right here on the Nightcap. JVT, would you like to tell us your thoughts on the final play call from the Phoenix Suns in regulation?
I would, but I'd also like to keep my job, and I don't think I'm allowed to curse on the air. It was hot garbage. Look, Chris Paul has been great down the stretch here. He has been phenomenal. The pick and rolls that they've been running with him have been working extremely well. One of the more clutch possessions that he had runs a pick and roll, gets Gobert switched on him, takes him out to the right block, and just hits a mid-range jumper right in his face. He's been incredible down the stretch. But Monty Williams and company decide to give the ball to Devin Booker, which you don't hate, but it's the design of the play, which is dribble it 13 times in the waning seconds and then just take two dribbles into the arc and put up a mid-range shot in the face of Donovan Mitchell. Clank, we're in overtime. Just hate some of those play calls at the end of these games. Run a play. And especially run a play with a guy who's been getting you there, which has been Chris Paul in those pick and rolls. But here we are.
And if this is to hit over, man, that would be brutal. Mm-hmm. It is 102-102. The total, 227 in this game. And it's never under till it's over. So we will see what happens here in overtime as Devin Booker starts off overtime with a bucket. I want to check the player props real quickly. Donovan Mitchell, he has sailed over his total at 26.5. He has 36.
He's the one that tied this game, by the way. A massive bomb from, I looked like 5 feet from beyond the arc. That tied the game up at 102. So a ridiculous clutch shot by Donovan Mitchell, not surprising.
All the big boys in this game, the notable names, have really done well. Chris Paul, 24 points, excuse me, so he's gone over his total. Donovan Mitchell, as we mentioned, 36 points. Devin Booker, he has 30 points, so he's gone over. DeAndre Ayton, he has 18. He's gone over his point total in this game. Rudy Gobert is not there yet. He's got 14. So he's at 14.5. And Bogdanovic, he has 20. So he is sitting over on his. So 104-102, JVT hoping for a little middle action in this game as Phoenix is just getting a plethora of offensive rebounds on this possession.
17-7, the advantage for Phoenix today in terms of offensive rebounds. It's been pretty nutty. And some of these, look, like the ones we just watched, they're just like long rebounds that you just kind of get lucky and stumble into. DeAndre Ayton had a couple where he had pulled in like three offensive rebounds on one possession and finally ended with a putback. But that's a pretty shocking thing given the presence in the front court for one Utah Jazz and Rudy Gobert. Give up that many offensive rebounds.
Yeah, Rudy Gobert tonight, 16 rebounds, JVT. You were mentioning, is Rudy Gobert, I hate using the word lock, but he's the favorite for a pretty good reason to win Defensive Player of the Year, right?
I mean, he is, but I do think that there's a couple of things that would unseat him, right? I think Ben Simmons, I haven't looked at the
defense. He's at minus 225 right now. Ben Simmons is at 2-1.
Yeah, and Ben Simmons is the one like that potentially unseats him. And I don't think it's very unrealistic to think that. Look, go back to when Philadelphia lost Joel Embiid for a while, right? They had 10 games without Joel Embiid on the floor. Over those 10 games, the league leader in defensive efficiency was the Philadelphia 76ers. Ben Simmons was a really big part of that. Ben Simmons is one of the best on-ball defenders in the NBA, and obviously it speaks to that. You see the odds there, too. I wouldn't say, like, Gobert is the rightful favorite. I think essentially it's a two-horse race between Gobert and Ben Simmons. I don't think Miles Turner has a realistic chance to win the award, given the hype and the momentum behind these two. So I would say, yeah, like I wouldn't feel entirely. If you're asking me, do I want to bet on Rudy Gobert now, I would say no, because I don't think the gap is that big between him and Ben Simmons.
Gobert tonight, 7-for-7 from the field, 16 rebounds, no blocks, which is surprising, but does have 3 steals in this game, 107-104. We're in overtime, Phoenix and Utah. We'll get into tomorrow's slate a little bit later on in the show. We'll turn the page. Phoenix will be on the floor against the Clippers tomorrow. Tomorrow night, we will have 3 games on during the show. 3 7-10 Pacific games tomorrow. Much juicier slate in the evening tomorrow. You want to come back tomorrow?
Well, actually, I think my regularly scheduled spots are on Thursdays, so I am on.
Yeah, you'll be on. You'll be on. You'll be letting us know. So we'll get to those games in just a little bit, but we do need to hit on the Masters. Need a return to the Masters. You are a big fan of betting on golf. I'm sure you have some tickets in that snazzy jacket pocket right now, ready to go for tomorrow. So we'll take a look at some of our bets for the Masters, and maybe JVT will be happy. He's hoping for a Phoenix 5-point win here. That work?
Yeah, I'll take it.
You've got Phoenix Phoenix plus 2 and Utah plus 6.5.
Take a 1-point Phoenix loss too. Let's go.
Any of it will work for JVT. So we will get you updated on Phoenix and Utah. Also, our Masters plays next right here on the Nightcap. It's Masters Week, and no one has better golf betting coverage than VSiN. Subscribers have access to all our full Masters coverage on VSiN.com with current odds, analysis of key golfers, and picks from our experts, including JVT. Also, watch this week's episode of Long Shots with our golf experts Brady Cannon, Wes Reynolds, Matt Eumanns, with a special guest appearance from Scott Van Pelt. It's the first major of the year, and our golf team is already in mid-season form, so make sure you start your VSiN free trial today to keep up with all the action, including daily email updates on betting options for each round, 24/7 video coverage, full access to our coverage on VSiN.com, and picks from every one of our experts. Sign up today, VSiN.com/subscribe. How you doing here, JVT?
Okay. It's a 114-112 game. Suns are about to get to the free throw line because you'd assume that the Jazz are going to foul at some point here.
And they do.
Yep, they do. So with 16.7, they're going to go to the free throw line up two. So we will see. Obviously, plenty of things can go wrong here in the next 16 and 7/10 of a second.
I feel like I need to have you on more so we can sweat out some bets.
That would be a boss decision.
Boss decision?
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you want me more. Me being the boss?
No, I mean, like, I think they'd have to approve me coming.
Oh, okay.
I'll come on. How about this? Tuesdays and Thursdays at about, what do we think, Aaron? 8, 9 o'clock? I'll be on for 20 minutes. From home.
So we'll keep an eye on JVT's sweat here. Phoenix leading by 2 over the Utah Jazz with 12 seconds to go.
Should point out that Donovan Mitchell is just freaking ridiculous. I think he's got 37 points now. There was a sequence at the
40.
End. Yeah, 40. Okay. And there was a sequence at the end where Chris Paul gets lost. You know, 2 defenders are on him, but they back off because they think the other has him. Hits a wide open 3-point shot. Donovan Mitchell comes down and he scores immediately, gets the ball back on the next possession. Like, he's just incredible the way he can finish and score. He's a lot of fun. It's been It's been incredible to watch them go back and forth with Booker and Paul. This has been a really good game.
Booker and Paul have combined for 62 points tonight. Booker has 35. He's at the free throw line now. He is a perfect 9 for 9 until he missed right there.
And that's a massive shot because now it's a three-point game. Now, here's the thing that's going to go in. Okay, this is good because it looks like the Jazz got fouled there, or is it a timeout?
I think it was
three,
a timeout.
Up three.
Mm-hmm.
Foul.
Yes.
Coaches, just for some reason in the NBA, just will not do it. We see it all the time. I know in college hoops, you watch much more than I do. Yep. I'm sure it's a thing that drives you nuts, too. So don't let them get a shot off.
College coaches, for the most part, unless you're Mick Cronin, decided not to do it in the Sweet 16, for the most part, they have been, I think, gravitating towards the fouling down or up three, which is the right move. Now, with 10 seconds to go, do you foul immediately?
No, I think you wait, right? You wait for a little bit, but you don't. You definitely don't let them get a clean look, and you do. You know, you foul when the time is right. I think I'm not really good with the technical aspect. I think you're waiting for under seven, under five. You foul about then, but regardless, like, you can't let them get a clean look because there's so many times in the NBA where teams will let them just have the possession and just play defense. You'll be fine.
Well, as we wait for the Suns and Jazz to come back out. What are some of your Masters plays that you've got in pocket?
All right, so in pocket, it's a digital one. I don't do tickets anymore. I want to do my part to save the planet and whatnot. So a couple of the bets that I've made up to this point, and maybe I'll add more. Usually I'll have about like four in my pocket and then go from there. John Rahm plus 1225 to win the Masters. Look, I like John Rahm a lot. I think his skill set is absolutely fantastic. It's funny how we do this all the time with like kids and like, what's the baby going to do? It was a storyline, if you remember, going into the Amanda Nunes fight. And last time I checked, I do think Megan Anderson still is healing from a fractured skull. That's facetious. She didn't actually break her. But you get what I'm saying.
It was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen when Amanda Nunes then brought the baby in the ring.
Right.
And
like, look at this woman, Megan Anderson.
And she was like, oh, look, hi, little baby. Yeah. Your mom just...
Destroyed me.
Yeah.
But I think that the kid angle is a little weird thing. I don't know, but I think it's talked about a little too much. He's a great golfer. He's got a solid course history at Augusta, despite it being short. So went with him. Patrick Reed, former champ, has the game that suits this course very well, like his iron play, 40-1. Mats is a thing where, look, I've bet him. I think, again, he's got good course history. Edit a 9, cuts made, couple top 10s. He has played this course really well in his career, too. I like his striking. I think he can do enough here with his game to perform very well. And then Adam Scott, 71-1. Look, I think for the most part, the common thread here is course history. Guys who have either won here, two of them have on my list, or have before just played very well over an extended period of time. Adam Scott, perfect 11-for-11 in terms of making the cut at Augusta. Mm-hmm. He knows the course extremely well. And at a price like that, with a history like that, I think that's worth investing in. And then the one tournament long matchup, Patrick Reed plus 112 over Jordan Spieth. I got Reed to win the thing. This is also just kind of a fade of Spieth in terms of price and just in terms of overall, like, I just don't know if I'm buying into the Spieth turnaround here. So that's what I got.
All right. I'll take a look at mine. I don't even think I sent in the outright winner. I might go in a little bit later, but I am going. What are we wowing about? What happened?
No, I can't believe you didn't send that in. I feel like that's something you should do.
I should. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Justin Thomas, I decided to go outright. But here are some of the matchups that I liked. I'm buying in a little bit on the Jordan Spieth hype here. Plus 155 to make the top 10 at Circa. You know, the way that he's been playing, I think, I don't know if he'll win it outright, but I think the potential of him being in the top 10, I like that odds. Colin Morikawa over Hovland. You know, the irons play of Morikawa in this matchup, a little plus money over Hovland. I think Hovland has really limited experience in Augusta as well, as does Morikawa as well. And then this was Molinari over Wolf was more of a fade of Matthew Wolf in this spot. So give me Francesco Molinari, minus 112. And then Justin Thomas, I think he's going to win it outright over Bryson DeChambeau. This is a fade two of Bryson DeChambeau. So at minus 120 for JT in a matchup over Bryson DeChambeau. I like that one as well. But yes, I did fire away on Justin Thomas. I believe it was plus 1175 to win outright. Maybe I'll throw in another. I know Steve Sands earlier today. Who was he? He was high on.
I think he was on
Niemann.
Oh yeah, there you go.
Like Joaquin Niemann a lot.
Yeah, I was thinking of Jonathan Coachman was with us yesterday talking about Spieth. Yeah.
So those are my plays. How are we doing on this the Jazz game here?
Well, you're over the total, which sucks for those who bet the under.
Wow,
right?
That's brutal.
Yep, it goes to overtime. It is now a 117-113 lead for Phoenix. A 4-point lead there. Can't do the math. 7.8 to go. You'll allow them to get a shot up here. All you want to do is just not foul. So we'll see what happens here. Looks like the Suns are going to get out of
it. And JVT, ladies and gentlemen, that is what they call a middle. Yep. Plus 6.5 for the Utah Jazz. Phoenix minus the 2. Boom. You win both. The Phoenix Suns win it. There you go. 117-113. And to those who played the under, you were the right side until you weren't. 117-113. The total goes over. We'll wrap things up. Turn the page to tomorrow. Right next, right here on the Nightcap. This week's episode of the Ron Flatter Racing Pod centers on the last major prep for the Kentucky Derby. That is this week's weekend's Arkansas Derby. Guests include Concert Tours trainer Bob Baffert, Vegas Review Journal turf writer Mike Bruckner, plus handicapping from Johnny Avello of DraftKings Sportsbook. The Ron Flatter Racing Pod is available for download tomorrow morning. Nope, Friday morning. Tomorrow is Thursday. Friday morning, VSiN.com/podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. It is sponsored by FirstBet. You can also find fine podcasts like Hardwood Handicappers, which is that's your podcast.
It is. We'll be recording tomorrow.
You can remind people about your glorious middle on this Jazz and Phoenix Suns game.
Tim, nope. It's just another day in the books. Put it in there and you move on. You put the wins behind you, you put the losses behind you, and you just...
Too even keel, man.
Keep on trucking.
See, what you got to do is when you hit the middle and you had Denver, you got to like unbutton, got to go, yeah, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, that's JVT.
There's kids watching. What are we doing?
You're just giving out winners. That's what you're doing. It's funny that we talked about this total in the Utah-Phoenix game quite a bit throughout the show. 41 points at the end of the first quarter, 91 points at the half, a total that went off here at Circa at 227.5. It was 102-102 at the end of regulation. Of course. 117-113, the final. That, folks, is a brutal beat. And you said you would have played the under, but then you said, I don't know. Man, it was your night. It was your night as you get the middle on that one. And the Jazz and Phoenix Suns go to overtime, and the over ultimately hits. Donovan Mitchell finishes with 41 points in the losing effort there for the Utah Jazz. Devin Booker, 35. Chris Paul, 29 points, 9 assists. This has been quite the acquisition for the Phoenix Suns in Chris Paul.
Yeah, 100%. Look, he's a really good leader. Chris Paul's as good as he is, he's an extremely underrated player. It's always kind of mystified me, the weird air around Chris Paul and how he's talked about. But no, he's been absolutely fantastic. He works really well with Devin Booker. Obviously slows the pace down a lot. He's obviously very cerebral, and you usually see Chris Paul teams acting in a very slow pace. We see it with Phoenix now, too. But there's no denying how good he's been. I mean, come on. You wouldn't watch 7 games, what we just watched? A high-scoring overtime affair? Like, that was a great game. So Phoenix is great, and this series, if it is going to be one, is going to be incredible. Western Conference Finals preview, maybe?
Maybe.
Top 2 seeds?
Maybe. And another possible playoff preview, Phoenix and the Clippers tomorrow night. Yep. Clippers laying 5. That seem high to you?
No, it seems pretty strong. Like, it seems relatively proper. Like, if, you know, looking at, let's see, we'll pull this up. Yeah, I thought it was going to be around 4.5, so that seems about right. Look, I think when it comes to the Clippers, this is one thing I brought up to you when we were talking about them the other day, where it is, The problem with them over the last few games that they had lost, the Denver game, the Orlando game, was that their offense had just completely disappeared. Their three-point shooting fell off the face of the earth, and that is something that generally when you're a team like the Clippers who's relying on their three-point shots, that'll regress to the mean. You'll come back. You're not going to shoot under 30%, you know, for four, five, six consecutive games. But what has been really good for the Clippers lately, which is why I would, if the number comes down the other direction, lean in that would be a play on the Clippers. Their defense, Tim, has been really, really solid. You know, the Portland game, give up a defensive rating of 117.4. No shame in that. Portland's one of the best offensive teams in the league. But then take a look at some of these defensive ratings since before then. 85.2 against the Lakers. 108.4 against Orlando. 109.7 against Milwaukee. 93.4 against San Antonio. 104.8 in the second game against the Spurs. This has been a team that has really thrived defensively. And against a slow-paced team, half-court-oriented team like Phoenix, I think they could guard them relatively well. So I think the Clippers have a pretty good matchup here.
So Clippers and Suns, that'll be one of the late night games. So coming off of this performance tonight, Utah losing to the Suns. Suns go to the Clippers, and the Jazz return home to take on the Portland Trailblazers. Right now, the Jazz laying 7 off of this overtime loss against the Portland Trailblazers.
7, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, that seems pretty strong. I mean, so part of my handicap today for Phoenix was the power rating of Utah is clearly at its peak. Like if you're betting on Utah, you're betting at the market high at this point. You go back over their last few games. You know, I mentioned the 9-game winning streak they had earlier in the show. During that 9-game winning streak, they were 5-4 against the spread. Last two games, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe they're now 0-2 against the spread, failed to cover here, and lost to the Dallas Mavericks. So 0-2 in their last as well. So we're talking about now over 11 games, a 5-6 ATS record, despite the fact that they're 9-2. It's a clear indicator that the market has them rated a little too high. And now you get Portland. That on the surface seems pretty high, given the caliber of offense that Portland has. But the problem is with a team like Portland, you know, I say that a team like the Clippers are relying on their three-point shooting, but they have Kawhi, who offsets that with his mid-range game. Portland is perimeter-oriented. If your three-point shots aren't falling, your offense is going to have a pretty rough night. And against a team that has the perimeter defensive talent that Utah has, that just worries me a little bit. Taking 7 would be the way to go, but it could get ugly. Like, Portland's a really high-variance team with some of its results.
Total sitting at 231 in that one. For tomorrow night, Portland and Utah, Detroit, Sacramento, also late night. Let's go back to one of the earlier games, 7:40 Eastern, 4:40 Pacific time. The Lakers continue their road trip, JVT. We talked about how important it was for them to beat the Raptors, and we looked at all of these games and said, how many games will they be actually a favorite in? And it's a pretty big indication of where the market's at. The Lakers are getting 8.5 against the Miami Heat tomorrow.
How about the total, too, by the way?
204.5.
Now, the last game went over, the closing total, yep. Right? It was one that we were tracking throughout that day. Yep. It opened 214. You could have gotten there. Went all the way down to, was it
208?
Yeah, something like that.
110-101 was the final.
But clearly, you know, it's funny. So the other day, you know, when I was in here, I had lost a bet on the Memphis-Miami under. I had bet that thing under 217, and for some reason, they just go up and down the floor. They start scoring, and it flies over. This is pretty interesting when you look at this from a couple of perspectives. 8.5 seems really large for a team like Miami who has not played well offensively. Now, they're incredible defensively. The one performance against Memphis the other day was the clear anomaly for what Miami has been able to do to this point. And the flip side of this, though, too, is as well as they play defensively, the Lakers, you know, we had the graphic the other day, shooting about 34% from three, if I remember correctly, since they lost LeBron. But they had a good three-point shooting night yesterday, and they're a team that's been chucking it. Like, they're shooting threes to kind of make up for the difference in terms of their lack of shot creation. It wouldn't surprise me now that we're kind of at an all-time low because, again, depending on the number, you're talking about 10 of the last 11 games for the Lakers going under the total. That seems like a pretty low total at this point, given, I think, what we're going to see from these two potentially. So
is this the
lean toward? This is the time to maybe come back now that the market's all the way in one direction on the total.
Yeah, that's a big thing you always look at is, you know, when you can jump in on the other side. So
yeah, you want to beat the trend, right? You don't want to be late to the party. You want to start the party.
So 204.5.
It's really low.
That is really low. That's got to be one of the lower totals we've seen this year.
Right in my memory, it would be, and I'll get the exact total for you right now. That would be the second lowest one
of the year.
Yeah.
Wow.
The Cleveland Cavaliers. They were on a stretch at one point early in the year where they had hit, I think it was 11 consecutive unders, and a game against Minnesota. Let's see. No, it was New York, closed 195. So I'll let you guess that that one went over. It was 11, by the way, so it was 10 consecutive unders. That game closes 195. It goes over and kicks off a stretch of six straight overs. So to give you an idea of like the
market. So you would look at the over in that game at that with that.
Yeah, that'd be my initial thought, yeah.
204.5. Look at the over. Cleveland, Oklahoma City tomorrow. Cleveland laying 2.5 against OKC, as we've talked about. You're sweating a little bit if you have the over on Oklahoma City wins here.
You need this one, right?
Oklahoma City is at home tomorrow, JVT, yep, and is getting 2.5 against the Cavaliers.
This is, again, so this is why these opportunities, this is a massive game if you have an OKC over ticket.
Yeah.
Like, you need to grab, these are the kind of wins you need against the Cleveland Cavaliers, but it gives you an idea, you're kind of alluding to it, right? How low the power rating is on this team, because they are catching 2 points at home against the Cleveland Cavaliers. And to give you a sense, right, of Cleveland in terms of the power rating and where they're at, keep in mind the other day, right, Detroit goes there to Oklahoma City. I think they closed it like a 3-point favorite somewhere in that range against the Oklahoma City Thunder. Ended up taking care of business and blowing them out. Yeah, they closed 3. So now Cleveland is laying 2. Like, Detroit's better than Cleveland. I think they're a little bit more than a point better than Cleveland. So it gives you an idea that this power rating is evolving and changing and lowering for the Oklahoma City Thunder. So again, you know, I think somebody tweeted me while we were on the air, why is that number so low between these two? Yeah, Paul Nelson. Well, Paul, I think it seems low, but it's actually pretty high for a caliber of the team of Cleveland at this point right now. So I would just be wary. Again, you were buying at the bottom of the market, I guess you want to phrase it that way, playing against the Oklahoma City Thunder like that.
Wrapping things up, and JVT, I want to go back to, you know, what we just witnessed. You know, Devin Booker and Chris Paul playing so well right now, the 2 seed in the Western Conference. I just pulled up the odds right now for the Western Conference. Lakers, Clippers, Nuggets, Jazz, all shorter odds than the Suns. 10-1 right now at the Westgate Superbook to win the Western Conference. DraftKings actually has them at 12-1. I mean, are we at a point where you really should consider the Suns to come out of the Western Conference?
Yeah, I think at those, like at 12-ish to 1, I think, yes, at this point right now when we're looking at them, they clearly, especially when you consider seeding, who they could draw in the first round, a potentially easier path for you to get to the Western Conference Finals and able to buy off of that, right? To put yourself in a position to hedge off and get some, you know, a favorable opportunity. So I'd say yes. Like, it's very clear that they're going to be in contention for the first overall seed, could potentially win it. Massive win today, by the way,
yeah,
for the race. I think now they're, what, 2.5 games back or whatever? Game and a half back. So this is going to be a team that is worth watching. So I would say yes, to get maybe get off yourself in the Western
10 to 1, 12 to 1 right now for the second best team and only a game and a half back. And that's just to win their conference, not the NBA title. All right. You got yourself a middle. Talk to you tomorrow on the show. Thanks to Steve Sands. Thanks to Patrick Everson. Thanks to Jim Root. Middleman Jonathan Von Tobel. Everyone behind the scenes, as always, Aaron Oster. We will be back tomorrow night. The Long Shots coming up next right here on VSiN.